In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening this afternoon. I appreciate you listening to Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every week at this time, we take a deep dive into some of the issues the Pentagon is dealing with, and we hear from people both inside and outside the building about how those challenges can potentially be solved. Today, it is my pleasure to talk to a retired Vice Admiral Norbert Ryan. He is the president of the Military Officers Association of America. Admiral, it's a pleasure to see you in studio. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Great to be with you, Francis.
You've been on our programs a number of times by phone. It's your first time here, and I welcome you, and I'm happy to have you. First of all, tell us about the Military Officers Association of America and what you do for the men and women in and now, and I guess out of uniform, too. Folks have retired.
Well, thanks, Francis. We were started in 1929 by a Marine colonel, Arthur Marricks, and I'm the ninth president in our 83 years. Basically, what we do is we advocate for a strong national defense and to keep our commitments to all the men and women and their families that have served this country. So it's a great mission, and we're down in Old Town Alexandria. We have about 390,000 members and 410 chapters across the country.
So you look at the conversations that we've been having in this city over the past, especially year, year and a half, from, I guess, two different viewpoints. Your perspective as a retired admiral and advocate for warfighters from that perspective, but also then as the advocate for the officers through MOAA as well. Is that fair to say?
Well, we advocate. I wouldn't have come to MOA, and MOA, M-O-A-A, is all about serving everybody that has served, the officers, the non-commissioned officers, their families, their survivors, and that's what makes our mission so great. We work with a coalition of 33 other associations in town, and we happen to be the co-chairman of that military coalition of 34 organizations.
When you hear the conversations that are going on and participate in those conversations, especially the budget items, what are the things that concern you the most, and what are the things, where do you find maybe pieces of agreement with some of the things that are going on in Congress right now?
Well, I have to say, since 9/11, I was in the Pentagon that day, that morning before we were attacked. The Congress has really kept the all-volunteer force on course because they have had a longer horizon. And so they've been the ones that have looked out and made improvements for this force that has been at war for 12 years, whether it's improvement for the Guard or Reserve, a GI Bill, helping our families, increasing pay. The Congress has paid attention. The concern now is, though, that the Congress may be getting a shorter horizon, just like the Pentagon in both Republican and Democratic administrations, and focusing too much in the short term. And when you do that, usually you hurt the most important part of our nation's defense, our people and their families.
That is the most difficult part. And as I look at all of these conversations going on, I think the debates around the sizes of weapons programs and so on are a little bit separated from the issues of the men and women that are serving because of that. The very thing that you're talking about. What are some of the priorities that you're pursuing in trying to, especially as we talk about things, not just the pay and benefits, but mm-hmm. force sizes and so on, what are some of the priorities that you're working on?
Well, the very first thing we're trying to get out is the truth, fact versus fiction. Francis, in this town, there are a lot of think tanks out there with a budgetary viewpoint that are getting out the bum dope on the cost of military personnel, their compensation, and their health care. And we've done a study, a fact or fiction pamphlet that we've sent to every member of Congress here recently, including all the new members, and also all of the elected officials and appointed officials in DOD. And what the facts are is that despite everybody saying personnel costs are squeezing the budget, personnel and health care costs have averaged about one-third of the defense budget for the last 30 years. And that's what they still average, about one-third of the defense budget. So we've got to get the fact out there that health care costs and personnel costs are not out of proportion. Our paper indicates that DOD is about one-third, Southwest Airlines is 31%, FedEx is 43%, UPS is 61%. We think one-third has been right for about the last decade, and it is still right. And so that's one of the tough things to get out there. And the other thing, of course, is the health care thing, that, gee, health care costs are eating us alive. Again, DOD has been a little bit disingenuous about that. And the real problems with healthcare are not the military personnel that are taking advantage of their healthcare benefit. It's the Department of Defense for living in the last century with a management and efficiency system that is just so outdated and so bureaucratic.
What are the first steps that you would like to see the Pentagon take to be able to correct that?
Well, first of all, in the healthcare area, they need to listen to, there have been over 15 studies since World War II that have been ordered by the Pentagon and by the Congress to say, what should we be doing in healthcare? And almost every one of those 15 or plus studies since World War II have said, you need to be fighting medicine just like you do war jointly. Yet we still have three different services and four other, contractors doing healthcare, all trying to do the best job. But can you imagine seven different organizations, seven pots of money? One example, the Defense Department in their hospitals, their military treatment facilities, they're 25% more efficient than the purchase care that we go out and get in the civilian contractors. Yet they're 27% underutilized. This is because we don't have transparency between each of the systems, the appointment systems, the beds, etc. Can you imagine any civilian corporation living with this? And this is billions of dollars a year, Francis, that could be delivering better health care more efficient and more effectively if we could get these folks to work together with one unified budgeting and management system.
Now, with your experience inside and now outside the service, what is the holdup there?
The holdup is the bureaucracy and the fact that there's been a war going on. There are a lot of good people, but they're focused primarily on, it was Iraq and Afghanistan, and now it's Afghanistan. And so they haven't been paying enough attention to getting this right. And this is where the real money savings are, whether it's in consolidation or what we've proposed this year with the Congress is simple things like in the medications in the pharmacy area, going to mail order or home delivery that saves $125 per prescription. DOD is just getting around to using a stamp to tell everybody that they ought to do that in the last couple of years. So, again, we're leaving billions of dollars on the table. We should be getting our act together before we put the burden on the men and women that have bailed us out for the last 12 years that have carried the other 99% of us. So this is gross inefficiency and ineffectiveness by the department and the administration.
But it sounds similar to some of the issues with the inefficiencies that I've heard all across the agency. I wonder if it may be difficult for them to prioritize which of these parts of the organization as they're transitioning out of active war fighting to tackle first. I mean, I've done any number of programs on the financial management systems that the Pentagon's trying to work through now.
So. Yeah. Well, I think here again, we're one of the things we really want is the Congress to play an active role. You remember when we came up with the warfighting Goldwater-Nichols legislation, Congress jammed that down the throats of the Pentagon. I was in there in the Pentagon at that time as a mid-grade officer, and I remember almost every service fought it because they were afraid they were going to lose this or that or whatever. And Congress just mandated it. And I think that's about where we are now, that Congress not only has to say, send a report over saying, study this or whatever, but you will implement a unified medical system with one single budgeting authority, et cetera, et cetera. Let the wise people that know a lot more about this do it so that we can have this kind of efficiency and effectiveness and save billions of dollars and deliver a much better program for all of our men and women and their families. Much more efficiently.
So it falls to organizations like yours and the others that you're involved with to convince, I guess, you start at the Armed Services Committees.
Yes.
And try to move it up the chain.
And we've had language in the House for a couple years in a row here. And Defense did a study on it, and they came out with, from doing nothing to doing everything. And they put the lowest common denominator. They've moved all the medical groups' leadership into the same building, but not much else has changed, frankly. These are good people, but somebody's going to have to tell them, this is what we want you to do.
Now, some of the other things that we'll talk about throughout the course of the program strike me that maybe we're in the same position, and we'll get into some more of those in just a moment. My guest today is Admiral Norbert Ryan. He is the president of the Military Officers Association of America, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to Pentagon Solutions.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
For P150, P150 GA, P150OK, P150TN, C250E, C250Q.
Whoever came up with the saying, put your money where your mouth is, must have had some dental work done. Just a filling can cost over $100, and other procedures like crowns and root canals can cost you hundreds more. Without dental insurance, you could be putting a lot of money where your mouth is. But now you can get dental insurance for less than a dollar a day. This isn't a discount plan. This is real dental insurance for over 300 covered procedures. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. For details, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-200-0885. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies. Even if you're retired, you can see any dentist you choose and never have to pay a deductible. Get the coverage you need for less than a dollar a day and put less money where your mouth is. For free information, call now, 1-800-200-0885. 1-800-200-0885.
WTOP and the Washington Wizards are looking for the best junior broadcaster in D.C. Your child can join me, Dave Johnson, along with Glenn Consor, as we call the Wizards-Houston Rockets game Saturday, February 23rd at Verizon Center. Plus, you'll get 4 tickets to the game and dinner in the press room. To enter, kids between the ages of 8 and 14 can submit an essay telling us why they should become our Wizards junior broadcaster. We're taking entries through January 18th. For all the rules, details, and to enter, visit WTOP.com, search Junior Broadcaster. Good luck.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
I'm Emily Kopp. On Thursday's Federal Drive, the White House's cyber czar Michael Daniel gives us his take on agency cyber strategies and the chances for legislation in the next Congress. And we'll learn about the volunteers who help the military say hello in 260 languages. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Admiral Norb Ryan, the president of the Military Officers Association of America, is my guest on Pentagon Solutions today. I'm looking at your legislative goals for 2013. It's a long list, and this is quite a challenging year, I imagine, to have a long list of priorities. How do you strategize about approaching Congress when there are so many things going on and they have a whole lot of work, even work that should have been done before now?
Right.
They're still playing catch up, and you're already strategizing for this year and beyond.
Well, we have a great board of directors, 36 board of directors from all over the country, all 7 of the uniformed services, and then our government relations staff, and we put our heads together. But we start with making sure there's enough money in the defense budget for a balanced budget that has enough for what I call your left arm, your weapon systems, your training, your logistics, your supply, et cetera. And then for the right arm, the only weapon system that has never let our country down, it's men and women in uniform. So we kind of focus on the big dollar amount so that the chiefs and the secretaries can have a balanced budget. But then we're focused on that most important part, the people. Do they have enough money to support the people and their families, to give them the kind of training they need? And, you know, we've heard many of our great leaders say, I don't care what system they have, what weapon system they have, as long as they're trained and they're the American troopers, I'll take them anytime. And so that's kind of our philosophy. If you get the people right, and they're on the all-volunteer force, then the rest of the things will fall into place. And, of course, it has to be balanced. And so that's why we've supported. The top thing for us is always the currently serving. That's the 1% that has kept us safe for the last 12 years. And that's what we have to keep our eye on. And it's an all-volunteer force. It can go in the ditch quickly if they think we're not paying attention or we're not going to keep our commitment. So my trips to Iraq and Afghanistan the last year, out of the last 5 years, there's only one negative when you go over and talk to those senior NCOs and majors and colonels and lieutenant colonels out in the field. The troops are another greatest generation, but their major concern is, do these troops have enough time at home under the same roof as their families, Francis? And when you look at somebody like in the Army that goes for a year, comes home for a year, and goes back for a year, out of that 36 months, think about this. They're lucky if they're under the same roof as their family for 8 out of those 36 months. That stress and that strain on the member, and particularly on their families, is really something. And so our focus this year is making sure, as the chief said, they have to bring down their forces, that they don't bring them down too quickly. As you know, in the legislation this year, they're saying about $15,000 a year for the Army, and the Marine Corps is coming down to $180,000 over a smaller per year thing. That's about as quick as you want them to come down in this kind of environment where these troops have been fighting. Now they're coming into a tough economic environment. So we want to make sure that they transition well, and we want to make sure that there are enough people in so that as they get a little bit more time at home, they have time to reacclimate themselves to their families. And that's why we see the stress on the families, the divorces, children seeking psychological help. The suicide rate, it's a complex issue, but I think it all starts with time, the stress on people coming and going, and then these leaders, when they are home, trying to get a little bit of time with their families and not knowing the new members of their squads or platoons. And so it has a ripple effect across the whole service, and these are the most resilient people we have in this country, our military and their families, yet how much can they be asked to do? So it's very, very important that we get this bringing down the force right, that the chiefs get the flexibility to do it in a balanced way and not have to jam a lot of the personnel cuts, because that's where the real money is up front. And so we're very pleased with the new defense authorization bill that puts limits on that.
One of the terms that I keep hearing to describe this this right-sizing, or however you want to call it, of the military, is we want to do it differently than we did it in the 90s during the Cold War. Mm-hmm. Is it your sense that the strategy that the Pentagon has released will do that and yet continue the kinds of things that you're talking about and allow that drawdown to happen in a strategic way and not happen too quickly?
I'm hopeful. I think that the chiefs and the secretaries have put together a realistic program. But now the real fear comes in is that, you know, when you're moving this number of pieces and parts, it's like trying to tune up the engine with it's still running and a war going on. And so just the littlest thing can throw it off. And so the uncertainty now of shifting focus and having these three cliffs coming up that are all self-imposed, you know, we've got the deficit, the debt limit coming up first, and then we have the sequestration at the beginning of March, and then we have, continuing resolution at the end of March. All of these, the people in the Pentagon, unfortunately, are spending too goddamn much time on what ifs and what coulds, and now because of the deficit, Ash Carter's memo, which is a good memo that says we got to be ready, we might have to cut $55 billion out in 6 months. They're doing things now that they probably shouldn't do, entertaining, cutting back on flight training hours, steaming hours for the ships, operating hours in the field for our Army and Marine Corps, that are things that these folks ought to be doing now, getting ready for their next deployment or their next rotation. So we're already eating away at the readiness levels and the constancy of that. And then on top of it, we're going to start playing politics if some of the folks have their way and start using the military paychecks as pawns. This is with 68,000 people, Francis, still over in Afghanistan going out on patrol every day and just having gotten a letter, can you imagine, from their spouse saying, hey, the check didn't come. What do I do about the rent, or what do I do about the doctor bill? And so things like that have such a rippling effect on the Pentagon with this war going on that we have just got to get this government to make some decisions earlier rather than the last minute. And that's why I sent a letter to Congressman Duncan Hunter today. He's got a bill on this pay thing so that they're not used as pawns with a war going on, that this is something that they're guaranteeing the military's paycheck, no matter how foolish they get on these deadlines. So this is the biggest worry now.
When you review all of these kinds of things and you look at Dr. Carter's memo, those kinds mm-hmm. of things, you've been around this stuff for a long time. Some of the comments that I've heard refer to that as a Washington Monument cut reminder that essentially wasn't written to Pentagon employees, was written to 535 members of Congress.
Yeah.
And that's not an unfair observation nor a bad one necessarily. But is it your sense that that message going out to those people in the Pentagon might have an impact on the Hill?
I hope so. You know, the people on the Hill want to do the right thing. They have done the right thing for the last 12 years for the military. Frankly, they are the ones that have. The Pentagon, whether it's a Republican or Democratic administration, has had a very short-range view. They weren't as supportive of the improvements for Guard and Reserve and health care and other areas as they should have been. They weren't initially supportive of the new GI Bill. They weren't as supportive of some of the pay increases they should have been and some of the improvements in health care for the whole force. But the Congress insisted on it, and so I think it's going to be up to the Congress to hear the Pentagon in this. The Pentagon knows how to plan. They know how to execute. But when you've got them doing nothing but plan after plan and contingency after contingency and taking precautions ahead of time because the bill would be so steep when it is implemented if sequestration takes place or they get a large cut with only 6 months of the year to do it, they've got to do what the Secretary and Deputy Secretary of Defense Carter have done. That's just prudent. So I hope defense is listening. I know people like Chairman Buck McKeon are listening and Senator Levin are listening, and they understand the complexities of what they're asking the Pentagon to do. But it is really putting them into a very difficult situation now. With this war going on, I just can't imagine the pressure on the troops.
You use the word complexities, and that's kind of where I want to pick up when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The president of the Military Officers Association of America, Norb Bryant, my guest on Pentagon Solutions today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Work in government relations? The new career site PowerJobs.com is currently featuring powerful positions like Vice President of Government Affairs, Director of Legislative Affairs, and Deputy Political Director from top employers in Washington. Brought to you by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com is designed specifically for you. Empowering today's top talent, PowerJobs.com.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
If you raise high the buff in blue, now's your chance to win prizes for showing your commitment to the Colonials. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now and start earning points for your likes, retweets, shares, check-ins, and more with GW Athletics content from GWSports.com and social media properties. Registration is free, and you can win special fan experiences, ticket upgrades, and buff in blue gear. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now.
Exercise and depression. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Exercise may help reduce depression for those with heart failure. Researchers at Duke University gave heart failure patients a questionnaire measuring depressive symptoms like sadness, irritability, and disturbed sleep. They were then randomly assigned into one of two groups for usual care and usual care with an exercise routine. Patients who exercised for 90 minutes a week reduced their symptoms of depression compared to those who just received usual care. Beyond those 90 minutes, exercise did nothing more. Dr. James Blumenthal led the study.
We do recommend exercise for heart failure patients. It improves cardiovascular fitness, and it also reduces depressive symptoms.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserve. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington. Great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Back at In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today is Norb Ryan. He is president of the Military Officers Association of America. And Admiral, you used a term in our last segment that I wanted to follow up with you on, and that term is complexities. Maybe one of the problems that as we look at all of these issues is that none of them are simple and none of them are clear cut. They're all very complicated, and Congress is struggling with a lot of these issues at the very same time, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. that they're dealing with the fiscal cliff stuff and sequestration, continuing resolution and so on, and also trying to figure out a way forward on a lot of these other things. You mentioned that you were pleased overall with the defense authorization bill that came out of Congress just a couple of weeks ago. What about that particular piece of legislation in particular pleased you, and what do you think what lesson do you think we could learn from that about the ability of the two sides and the two chambers in Congress to work together on some of these other issues that maybe are not directly defense related, but of course everything that Congress does seems to impact DOD in one way or another?
Yeah, great question. I think, the defense committees, the Senate Armed Services Committee, the House Armed Services Committee, they've always been the most nonpartisan and try and collaborate, be collegial. They know that they've got a really, really important job. And so they listen to one another, and they end up compromising. And that's what they did in the conference this year between the Senate and the House. And I think that what came out of there is the wisdom of what the Constitution put together. We had good input from people on both sides of the aisle, and they came up with, I think, a good direction for the Pentagon. And it starts with the troops, making sure that we don't come down too fast and that the chiefs don't get too much pressure on them to go too low too quick on the people side. So even though some of the service chiefs may have wanted a little more authority one year than the other, I think having that speed brake on is a good thing, because in the past that has been a problem. You talked about earlier coming out of the Cold War, coming out of Korea, coming out of Vietnam, no speed brake. We just cashiered out people and it was a catastrophe. And so I really liked the measured way that the Congress looked at this to make sure that we don't throw out people into a difficult economy, and that we give the services chance to get this operational tempo and personnel tempo where they have more time at home for training and with their families. That is job number one, to get this force back more resilient than it is.
We've heard, excuse me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to follow up on that because we've heard on any number of occasions and any number of arguments about refreshing the hardware, and we don't hear nearly as much as you're talking about refreshing the manpower.
Right. It's got to be both. You know, it can't be one over the other. It's got to be balanced. I think the chiefs have an excellent plan of how to do that. And so the Congress is going to have to take a look at things going forward. Now, I don't think they felt that the administration had a very good plan on the base realignment and closure. But in the future, that is something that the Congress and the nation is going to have to look at is, do we have too many installations for the number of people and the weapon systems that we have? So we have to keep this all in balance as we go forward. And hopefully the Defense Department will come up with a better, approach of how to do that part of it. And that's where the Congress will have to cooperate. But I'm very pleased that the Congress listened to the associations, the military coalition on this health care issue. This is a very, very big deal, Francis, because this was one where last year the military coalition compromised and thought that the Defense Department proposed some increase in fees for the military health care system that we went along with. But then they insisted, the Congress did, that inflation be indexed at the cost of living vice medical inflation. We agreed to that last year, but the Pentagon came back in the 2013 budget and tried to make it at medical inflation and triple and quadruple fees on medications and stuff. And we just couldn't go along with it because it doesn't recognize that these folks pay most of their fees up front in decades of service and sacrifice. And so the Congress shut that down, but did allow them to raise the fees moderately and found a way to save the money by using this home delivery system for over 65. So, again, I think the Congress came up with something that advanced the ball, saved the government money, kept this program moving, but told the Pentagon, please don't send anything else over here until you do some due diligence on getting a joint medical command that is, in fact, a unified medical command. We're not telling them to get rid of, you know, their separate service chiefs and whatever, but put it all under one budgeting authority so that we have transparency and we can deliver health care and save billions of dollars while we're doing it.
To stand up a joint medical command, could the Pentagon follow some of the same practices that they've used to stand up some of the other joint commands? I mean, is it the same concept, or is it different and specialized because it's health care?
It's different and it's complicated. But, you know, all these great organizations do it. And if you look at some of the organizations that have a lot to do with trying to revamp civilian health care, whether it's the Geisinger Medical Center up in northeastern Pennsylvania or Kaiser Permanente, these organizations have figured out how to have a seamless appointment system to drive down cost, to make the payments based on the quality of care provided by the providers. These are things that the Defense Department wants to do, but they need to do it under one unified group rather than seven pots of money and seven different organizations. It's so inefficient. And it isn't just the overhead of ordering things together and eliminating duplication in, you know, a headquarters. The real savings is in the delivery of health care throughout the country. And it's billions of dollars a year. When you have a $50 billion budget, even if you just conservatively save 9%, $4.5 billion, Francis. That's far more than they're asking constituents to pay. So we hope that they have learned that lesson. That's one of the other great things that's in that bill.
Norbert Ryan is the president of the Military Officers Association of America, my guest today on Pentagon Solutions. And we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Experience and stability, the two most important things when picking a website development partner. As one of Washington's largest website development companies, AmericanEagle.com, an industry leader, has completed projects for thousands of organizations, associations, businesses, and the government, from the local to the highest federal level. AmericanEagle.com's GSA schedule makes it easy to quickly order website design and development services. They also provide reliable and secure hosting solutions in their PCI-compliant data center. Whether you're a local, state, or federal agency, your website is likely the top communication tool used by your constituents. AmericanEagle.com understands the importance of governmental efforts for the public good and will customize solutions for your agency to ensure the continuity and success of your online operations. For federal government clients, please see their GSA schedule and explore some of their government websites at AmericanEagle.com. For any of your website development needs, including hosting and maintenance after your launch, call 703-WEBSITE. That's 703-WEBSITE.
What is the current state of morale in the federal workforce? Is it better or worse than it was a year ago? Federal News Radio is looking for your thoughts on morale in the federal government. Take our survey and tell us what you think are the biggest contributing factors to positive and negative morale. Do agency leaders have the tools they need to fix morale problems? Results of the survey will be included as part of a Federal News Radio special report in February. Find the survey at federalnewsradio.com. Search survey.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Pentagon Solutions today is Vice Admiral Norm Ryan, retired, and he is the president of the Military Officers Association of America. We've talked about a number of issues on the program so far, Admiral, and I wonder if we were talking about establishing a joint medical command a moment ago and some of the other issues that we've talked about throughout the course of the hour. I wonder if there are some of these, as I'm looking at your priorities, that you believe would be relatively easy for the Pentagon to implement if they were able to do so. As I look at your list, some of these things don't seem to be tremendously difficult if only they were able to act. Is that fair to say, do you think?
Well, some of them are easy. Some of them cost a lot of money. But I would say a couple of things. Number one, I give the administration, President Obama, and the Defense Department and everyone for working on finding jobs for veterans coming out. And we've moved the needle down. It's down into the 10% range now. It's still too high. But one of the things that we would like to see the Congress and both the Department of Labor, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and DOD do is do a much better job of consolidating how we match young men and women coming out of the service or older men and women coming out of the service with employers that want to hire them. You saw what Walmart said yesterday. A Navy veteran, by this way, I might add, that mentioned that he wants to hire 100,000 of our recently leaving the service personnel in the next 5 years. The problem we have found, and we have an award-winning group, Francis, that tries to help men and women, officer and enlisted, and their spouses trying to find employment, how to be prepared, a resume, how to get things done, how to research their companies, how to interview, give your 30-second commercial. The Defense Department, Department of Labor, and VA have come up with a good transition course, but now it's called GPS. They've got to implement this thing and make sure everybody gets to it so when these young men and women and veterans come out, they're prepared, and then we've got to get them matched up with the employers that want to hire them. Right now, it's too disparate. And I, for one, want to talk to the Congress, and we've had some folks over there express an interest in perhaps looking at, because veterans know, even though all three of those groups are bureaucracies, DOD, VA, and the Department of Labor, they know how to talk to the Veterans Affairs group. And I would like to see veteran employment come under the Veterans Affairs Department. Now, it doesn't mean that people would have to transfer from the Department of Labor. I just think there would be more unity of command and more of a latch-up if we do it that way. So that's one of the things we may want to explore with the Congress and with the administration this year. The administration has certainly not closed the door on any of these discussions, but it's very complicated, and we may not have it right. But I think we really need to latch up those agencies better and get a more unified effort there. Everybody's working, but we're not all rowing exactly in time with one another. So that's a big deal. Much like the Congress has just asked all the DOD departments on another critical thing, and that is all the efforts going on to reduce the suicide rates. A lot of well-intentioned people out there, but can we row a little bit better in the same direction and make sure we're all doing the same best practices? Hopefully we can. Those are two areas that I think I would really like to see people work on better. The other thing from the veterans' point of view, I give General Shinseki and Undersecretary Hickey, Allison Hickey, a lot of credit for what they're trying to do to get this electronic medical record with DOD. But it is still too far in the future. It's got to be done quicker. I'm worried about this transition, again, with a lot of people turning over in DOD. We think they got to do something different than just a new medical record, and they've got to triage this even more than they are. A lot of the veteran service groups have some reservations on this, but some of the members of Congress and some former secretaries of VA have proposed perhaps giving folks a payment for something that's obvious. They've lost a limb. They're an Agent Orange person that can prove that they've been in Vietnam, so that we don't have some of these people waiting for a year or two, despite incredible efforts by the VA. But when you're doing a million claims, but this year 1,250,000 come in, I think they really got to look at it. It reminds me of, you know, in Italy, it used to take you a year to get a phone line until they invented cell phones. Well, I think there's a way to do this, to trust the veteran, to give them that which is really guaranteed. So I think we need a little bit more innovation in that area so that we don't leave so many people waiting so long. And then we really think a lot needs to be done. You know, people say, well, only 6,000 or 7,000 people have lost their lives in Iraq or Afghanistan. And thank God it's that number and not what we lost in Vietnam, but it's way too many. But when you look at the seriously wounded, over 50,000 wounded, not counting all the post-traumatic stress, I think we're doing a pretty good job with the wounded, but we still need to do more for their caregivers. I visit these polytrauma centers where the spinal cord and brain injury folks are from the IED blasts. We go up to the treatment facilities where they're receiving wonderful care. But the pressure on the caregivers, let me say up front, nobody does more for their military or their veterans and their wounded than our country. But there are some things we can do more for those caregivers. Part of it can be a partnership in government and help with the Congress, and we have some great people like Jeff Miller working on that up there, the head of the House Veterans Affairs Committee. And then what we need to have is a better public-private partnership and some things to help these caregivers, you know, that are going to be helping their son or daughter or their husband, wife for 30, 40, 50 years, Francis. And we've got to do more to help the burden, because more and more of these folks that would have never survived in the last wars are surviving, thank God. They have the dignity of their life, but it's a challenge for them and their families. And until you go out and visit these folks and you go back to the same hospital 6 months later and they're still there and they've made some progress, but they can now move one finger in their one arm, or, you know, they can now blink and that type of thing. These families are still under enormous burden. They're not asking for much, but we need to give them more.
Norb Ryan is my guest. He's the president of the Military Officers Association of America. You talked a little bit there about veterans employment. I want to touch on that when we come back to wrap up the program.
Great.
On Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue in just a moment on Pentagon Solutions on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today's inauguration news is brought to you by Deloitte.
The General Services Administration provides support to all agencies during the inauguration by supplying everything from office space, furniture and equipment, to services like payroll, IT, and mail management. Both the Presidential Inaugural and the Armed Forces Inaugural Committees are supported by GSA as they plan and execute all the activities for the inauguration, including the ceremony, parade, and security details. Together with the Office of Personnel Management, GSA provides guidance material for any new appointees.
Every 4 years, Washington gets a chance to redefine its vision of how to make America stronger. How will you help shape our future? Turn to Deloitte. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we'll help you rethink, reduce, or restructure, or even change the game so that the new normal has better odds of becoming the next prosperity. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Join me this week for my special guest, Kim Walsh Phillips, who is an award-winning speaker and author of the book, Awareness Campaigns Are Stupid. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, the premier law firm located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area and clients across the country. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
The Association of Government Accountants National Leadership Conference is coming February 12th and 13th to the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center. AGA's NLC is the training event for developing and training government financial professionals to excel as leaders in today's competitive government market. Don't miss this opportunity to share best practices, to find solutions to shared challenges, to network with your peers, and to learn from the top financial management leaders and industry experts. Register today at agacgfm.org/NLC.
Back with Nor Bryan, the president of the Military Officers Association of America on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Pentagon Solutions every Wednesday in the 3 o'clock hour, where we look at the challenges the Pentagon is dealing with. And one of those challenges, as we were talking about a little bit during the commercial break, Norb, is the idea that men and women are coming back from the wars and they're choosing to transition out of the military. Mm-hmm. And they are looking for work. And you mentioned the Walmart example, Walmart saying they want to hire 100,000 vets. And one of the things that struck me about that, and the announcement, the gentleman was really candid in the announcement. Hey, not everybody may be cut out for a career in retail or a career at Walmart, right. But I think it lends a level of credibility to the quality of the people that are coming out, that if they're good enough for Walmart and they're going to figure out a way to make it work, my little company with 500 people can probably do the same thing.
Couldn't agree more. I think it's just a wonderful example that they've made this commitment, and hopefully others will do it for the same reason. You're getting people that really have a great work ethic, great teammates, just everything that you want in somebody. As we know, a lot of the problem is with the military person making sure that they can translate their skills to talk to that civilian HR person that may not have a military background, to help them understand why they might be a good fit. But frankly, one of the things that I think the Walmart example, as we were talking about, Francis, in the break, does is it says we know that these people are coming out to have some world-class skills that we want to take advantage of. And it tells other people, gee, if a smart outfit like Walmart, as successful as they are, wants to tap into this and they already have 100,000 military people, I better take a second look at this myself. Because unfortunately, a lot of people without the military background do read in the press that this war has been very difficult for our military and their families. And so there are people coming home with post-traumatic stress, but the majority of them are going to adjust. They're going to be fine. And those with visible wounds are going to be fine, too. And so these are people that are going to make you proud to have them as employees, and you're going to wonder, wow. But it is something that you have to think about and have to process. And Obviously, it's a risk for the lot smaller companies, and that's where I think the Guard and Reserve are having higher unemployment rates, because they're going and coming just like the active forces, and they're coming back to small towns where there's small companies. And, Francis, they say, gee, I'd love to hire somebody, but if they're going to be gone every third year and they're my foreman, when I only have 52 people or 110 people, it is a huge setback for somebody like that that doesn't have several hundred thousand or tens of thousand employees. So we have to work with this. And employees support a Guard and Reserve. The Pentagon are doing a great job in that area. I have to give a shout out to the Chamber of Commerce. They are doing a fantastic job of holding career fairs around the country. MOA has two huge career fairs here in the D.C. Convention Center. We have coming one up here in April. I urge people to go on our website, MOA.org, and find out about that. Open to anybody that has served in the military. It's a veteran-friendly, civil service-friendly, spouse and dependent-friendly thing, and it's one of the largest military career fairs. A good chance for people to meet employers that are looking to hire people.
Admiral, we're going to put a link on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth to your website so people can find
Fantastic.
Out more about that. We're just about out of time, but I want to thank you very much for coming in today and talking about these issues, and would love to have you come back and keep us updated on the progress that you're making on some of these legislative goals and some of the other activities that the organization is doing. I thank you very much for your time today,
My
sir.
Pleasure.
And thanks for your service to our country. Norb Ryan is president of the Military Officers Association of America, and as I mentioned, put a link to them at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth so you can read more about them and read some of their legislative goals and others. This conversation will be archived on our website later this afternoon as well. And hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu is on.